Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, what's it like? What's it like? What's it like to see the moment? To feel yourself growing? This is greatness that I'm showing. Close your eyes, I'm still glowing. Close the door, I'm still going. This is grand business. Have a seat and be a witness. Hey, what's it like?
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Strictly Hoops with CJ Miles. Rate, here. Review, subscribe on your podcast platforms and on YouTube. Drink a Perrier, as CJ is doing, and subscribe on YouTube as well.
Mountain Valley, send me some water.
Shout out Mountain Valley.
Shout out Mountain Valley. Yeah, shout out to everybody, man. Again, every week.
Thursday.
It's happening.
Every
Thursday. Every Thursday.
New episode.
Whether somebody's got to change the time for a kid pickup, whatever, it doesn't matter. We figure it out.
Exactly.
That's what we're doing. We just texting each other saying, hey, I got to do it today. So can we push it 30 minutes? Hey, I got to do it this time. Can you push it an hour? But we're getting it done.
They don't need to know our noise. Hey, they get an episode every Thursday.
It's real life, you know?
Yes, exactly. It's like the NBA, right? Like we were just talking off air. It's like the Raptors start the season, 3 games in 4 days. And you're like, that's the NBA.
It's the NBA for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Feels like everything. a month in a week feels like a month.
And every game feels like it matters a little bit more than the last one. And you're only as good as your last game. That's the breaks. That's the fun part. But I mean, as we're recording, you know, every single Thursday, this will be the only time we encounter a situation where we only have one game to play off of. Yeah. And it was a home opener and the Raptors won a fun game. But before we get to some of that stuff, I wanted to ask you about your costume for Halloween. Because I saw you were hanging out with with Darren Williams.
Yeah, that's my guy, man.
You guys all know Darren Williams, terrific point guard in his heyday with a few different teams, Utah, Brooklyn Nets. Tell me about that experience, and also who were you?
So we were, I was Fred from Scooby-Doo.
So you were, because Grady was Scooby-Doo. Grady Dick was Scooby-Doo.
I didn't know. Yeah, I did see that actually. Yes, I saw the picture. But I was Fred from Scooby-Doo. It was so bad. Like, you should have, before we left, my wife and my sister were trying to like comb the wig. We put hairspray in it just to get it to look some type of presentable, right? And it was not working out. But then that became the best part about the costume, is that it did not work out. And the fact that I was blonde wig and black beard, but that's a whole nother thing, right?
Yeah, the picture on your social doesn't have the wig, so I guess you already took it off.
Yeah, it got hot because Darren had a whole get up on too.
Yeah, what was he?
He was the Mad Hatter. So if you just saw the whole thing, or if you go look at through his pictures, right, you probably posted it. He was Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland.
Okay, because he went to town.
He had a 3-piece suit on, whole nine. Like, it was burning up. I was hot in just that wig and his shirt, so I know he was burning up.
His eyebrows are thick.
thick but eyebrows. If you saw him in it's person, like they were like hanging off. They were like off his face a little bit, so it was funny.
Yeah. Good times.
But there was a couple guys there. That the NBA guys, you know, Charlie Villanueva was there. Harris was there. Yeah, there was a couple people there. Charlie played in Toronto. Yes, he did.
He got drafted by the Raptors.
Yeah,
he had I hadn't seen him against the Raptors, right? He had 50.
He did.
51?
Yeah, I hadn't seen him in years. That was crazy to see him. He lives in Dallas now.
All you Texas guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what your best season opening game was? Do you know what year it was? Do you know when it was?
No idea.
Season opening game. You don't know?
Not even close. I've never... Like, it went blank when you asked that question. I have no idea.
I'll give you a hint. It was with the Raptors.
Against Chicago.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. And we played them like 4 days before that, and I had a big game in Chicago in preseason.
There we go.
I remember now. It's coming back,
22 points.
That was fun.
7 of 12 from the field, 6 of 9 from 3, a plus 25, 5 rebounds. Quite the start.
Yeah, that was the start of the bench mob.
Yes, it was.
That was the start of that. Yeah, that was the start of the bench mob right there. But that was fun. That was a fun night, because that was obviously my first night in that experience, right? In that real packed crowd, whole fan base there, loud. And that was I remember that night. I just didn't think of it as my best night. I just remember the night.
Yeah, that's a great game. Without going too much into detail, the crowd's not the same these days. Anyways, moving on, I'll leave it there. It was much better back then. Pivoting to the game, the Raptors win 97-94. A couple of quick stats. 72 points per 100 possessions in the half court for the Raptors. 36 made field goals, 27 assists. They outscored the Minnesota Timberwolves 34-12 in fast break points. Mm-hmm. Now, true shooting percentage, Raptors at 50%, Minnesota at 43%. Could you summarize this game in one word, sir?
Honestly, it was very much a first game. Like, I know it's two words, but first game. Meaning, what I mean is you see a bunch of promising things.
Yeah.
And you also see turnovers, like miscommunications, like little, like
Butterfingers, bro. Butterfingers.
For both sides.
Yeah.
There's one play, Kyle Anderson literally trips over his own feet. He just falls down. Like, it's happening all over the place in the game, right? So, yeah. Like, but you also got to remember that first game, adrenaline is not the same as playing in preseason.
No.
So, like, you still got that rush that comes in with that first night and a bunch of guys learning new things, learning new players, doing things and stuff like that happens.
Yeah, I was going to say encouraging. So in a similar point to what you had said, like, there are some things to flag.
It's a podcast. I can't use one word.
Yeah, true. Not you.
Not me.
No.
Not me.
Did you see the celebration in the locker room afterward?
Yes, that was crazy. That was fun. That was crazy. He ran in there with the full sprint.
Yeah, well, what's funny is that the day before, Darko was, you know, Nita was asking, like, oh, so you excited about, you know, maybe getting your first win, first game, all that kind of stuff? And he's like, yeah, but, you know, first things first, it's about getting the win. But then once he got that win, oh, boy.
Yeah, you got to let him know, man. We got to and it's fun for it to start with him, you know, for them not have to go bring that energy to him, for him to bring it in the locker room like that is pretty cool to see.
Yeah. And the players fed off of it too. It's kind of cool for a coach to be, for lack of a better term, vulnerable in a way like that. You know, like, sometimes coaches can just be so stoic. Like, I mean, it's different sports, but hockey, you know, score a goal, even basketball too. Like, you get a game winning shot, the coach just walks off the court. Sometimes it's okay just to show me something. Show me.
There's a separation. There's a wall in some places that doesn't have to be there. You know, with, like, coaches and players. Yes, there has to be, you know, a respect and for the authority and the game plan and where we stand as his roles, as this, you know, as this organization. But, like, we all want to win. And I think we should all showcase that when we do and how we're happy for each other. And I'll be happy for you and you'll be happy for me. And I think that part needs to be shown more.
Yeah. The clip we're talking about was on Open Gym. Love those people. I know a lot of the people that work with Open Gym. Great dudes, man. Every season, some of the people change, but some of the same faces that stick around just do a terrific job of giving terrific content to the people. And what Darko said after that celebration part, and I enjoyed this too, is that I'm paraphrasing, but what's great is that we got the win, but there is so much room for growth, but you guys did a good job, you know?
Yeah, that's the first of all, before it goes away, the guys at Open Gym, because you mentioned them. That is the best. I don't even know what to call it. I don't even want to call it like a film crew that just felt like a social. I don't want to call it
video production team.
I don't want to disrespect what they do. That is the best version of that in the NBA. Like, there's nobody better at that in the league. The way they capture that, the way they make it feel, the way they are able to bring access to people without it being overbearing, without you ever feeling like they're in the way. Like, we'll see some episodes, and I was like, man, they were in there? You know what I mean? Like,
really?
They got that? Like, there's times because, one, because they're good people and you get used to seeing them. Two, because they make sure they don't – I think they just got a good feel over time of, like, all right, this is not the time for me to turn this flash on, right? Like, this is not the time to do that. But, yeah, shout out to those guys. And back to the game.
Like, I'm going to send that to them, by the way. I'm going to let them know you've said that.
Okay. Yeah, that's in – encouraging is definitely the word, right? There's so many things you see in so many places. You can see, like, man, like, there's some shots we generated. There were good shots that we just missed. There's some like you said, butterfinger turnovers, little mistakes that are happening, things that won't carry over to the next game and as we get going together. And then there's things we just haven't even added yet. Like things that he knows way more than anybody else does. That's the thing that's the most fun about it. Yeah, he knows the plays he wants.
Yeah, but what's crazy is that maybe you're different, but I didn't see too many different sets that they ran compared to preseason. It was a lot of the same stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I want the stuff that's going to be the go-to, the base of everything, to be so sharp before I need to start to add anything. You know what I mean? Like, I want you to be able to execute this in your sleep. I want this. I want you to win games with this and only this so you buy into it.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest thing, right? If you see that we can win games with just the base of what I've given you, when I come to introduce something else to you, there's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
We're 20-6. I have a new play for you. You're excited because it's gonna make us 32-8. You know what I mean? Like it's gonna give us more ways and more understanding. And I think that's the biggest thing is like when you're bringing in a new coach and he's bringing in some new tactics and you got some players, younger players you're trying to bring up and all types of things and older players you want to make comfortable. Yeah. I'm not gonna overload you with too many things that seem like I'm taking away from you.
Mm-hmm. Another encouraging thing, and we'll get to this throughout the podcast, but they shot 14 of 35 from three. And it's not just that they shot that percentage, which is 40%. It's the type of shots they were making. A lot of those were quick triggers, man. And they're getting those off very fast. And if they're making those, the easier ones, they're going to flow.
Mm-hmm. I love it. It's in my notes. It's in CJ's notes. The first possession, they shoot three threes.
Pascal opening the season with a three. That's a good one.
The first possession, Scotty shoots the kick out to the corner, off his rebound. Dennis shoots, off his rebound. Pascal shoots, and nobody thinks twice about it.
No.
It's not like there's a dribble, another penetration. There's no jab. There's no, everybody catches and shoots it. And yeah. I think that's a, like, obviously you don't want to fall in love with it, but the confidence that comes with them taking those shots, being open and no hesitation is going to grow everybody's percentages.
100%. And I asked exactly that to Dennis yesterday. After the game, he came in looking just so swaggy. Like, he takes his appearance very seriously. And the media, we were waiting for him. Like, I mean, full disclosure, it took a long time. But at the end, we're also like, you know what? Dennis, he puts himself together pretty well.
It was worth it.
It was worth it, though. And it's no different than like a Serge Ibaka, right? We heard the stories about Serge, the skincare routines he does.
Oh goodness.
You can't argue with the results, though. And it's no different with Dennis.
Yeah. And who am I to rush a man who just ran for 30 something minutes, like on a clock time, who just played basketball for multiple hours? Who am I? Because I was like, I didn't have the same type of routines, but like, I was like that after the game, we get in the locker room and I'd be sitting in my chair sometimes, still in like my jersey. People like, what are you doing? I'm like, bro, we just been working out and running for 4 hours, like pregame, shoot around this morning, whole day. I don't have anywhere to be right now. Like, why do you want me out of here so fast? Like, what do you want from me, right? Like, not disrespecting the media, obviously, but I mean, just in terms of like the mental state I would be in after games.
Seriously, and I think about that as well, that when it comes to a cool down, just like, you know, the time that you have with the team, talking about the game that transpired. I always thought that a player would want to do the media thing and just get it out of the way. So then they can just be done with it and they can take their time or whatever, but maybe they're gonna take their time anyways. I don't know.
Yeah. And but also me, I think the media gets a better me personally, I'll say this, when I get that time, because now I got time to process so much of it. You know what I mean? Like, if I don't have time to process it, then you throw me a question. I don't have the real answer.
Yeah.
I have the generic answer. Both teams play hard. Like, that's what I have, right? but if I have time to process, I can give you detail. I can give you, you know, plays start to come back to me and clearly in mistakes and things like that.
But yes, back to what Dennis said. And I asked him about pretty much how a player, a team can feel better about the shots they're taking, more confident when they know that A, they're coming, and B, the coaching staff wants them to take it, you know? And we've talked about that, but even the fact that Dennis, he mentioned on his own, that I asked him about his own three-point shooting, which we'll get to in a second. But I think that's also really important because you've talked about how important that is. Obviously, the mechanics, your process has to be followed. But even like those couple of seconds leading into your shot, if you know you're going to take it, that has to help.
Yeah. The hesitation is what brings about – well, I shouldn't say – the hesitation is what – gets in the middle of the thought process and the process of your work from every day, right? Because when you're working on shooting, you don't think, oh my God, I'm gonna have to jab. Like, we're working on something. like nobody's going to tell you to stop and not shoot it in the middle of this drill, right? So like everywhere you practice something, there's no hesitation in it. You know you're shooting. You know what you're doing. There's confidence. Why you see guys, people be like, I see these big guys make all these threes in practice and do this because they're supposed to be shooting them right now. Mm-hmm. Like there's no decision process in this right now. It's like you're going to make five from that spot. So after he might miss the first one, he might make four or five in a row because I'm supposed to be shooting this shot and this is what the goal is. In the game, there's so many things that pop up in the middle midst of that. Is the guy close enough? Is the closeout happening? Do I want to take this shot? Did I make my last two or three? Have I made one of the last nine when I came into this? There's so many things that are in the subconscious that shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But you just carry it as a player just because you want to do the best job you can do. And I think the encouragement from the other side to the players, just telling them, hey, this is the game plan. This is what we want to do. We believe in you making this shot is going to change so many guys tremendously.
Yeah. And also, to be fair to Dennis, too, he mentioned when I kind of pushed a little bit further on the three-point shooting and like the focus from the coaching staff to get those shots up, he's like, he kind of, and again, I'm paraphrasing, he's kind of saying that, yes, they encourage it, but also we have to know when we got to reset, get back into a play, make you know smart decisions and try and get a better shot. He's like, it's not always about taking the three-point shot, but the signs right now, the green light that players are feeling, and even like a pressure to Chua, which again, we'll get to in a second, it seems like he knows when is the time for him to take a three-point shot, right?
And you don't have anything to prove.
No.
Because of the confidence they've given you. So like, you see guys come into a game and trying to prove that they should be able to take threes, prove that they should be able to put the ball on the floor, prove all these different things. And when you got belief in the game plan and what we want you to do and the things, now I don't have to play with that sense of weight on me. It's like, oh my God, I better make this shot or I'm never going to get to shoot another three again. And that's not where you want to be as a shooter. You don't ever want to be in that space.
100%. 100% not.
Yeah, not.
67.9% at the rim yesterday against the Wolves. So they were pushing the ball constantly. No different than what we saw during preseason. And didn't matter who it was. It was get the rebound, get up the court. And they got a lot of easy buckets that way. And I'm sure that's going to continue. And further to the three-point shooting percentages that I talked about, 44% on above the break threes yesterday. A lot of those were tough shots. I mean, it's a good sign that they're willing to take them so far.
Yeah. Dennis is going to have to make from up there too. Dennis is going to have to make.
Oh, we shot eight.
Yeah. He's going to have to make them right. Like they're going to have to take them. Somebody's got to do it in that first lineup, especially because those guys can make shots, but they're not quote unquote 3-point shooters, right? Guys that on the move, dynamic guys. Right. So the stuff that you get off driving, kicking, everything, they got to go up. You got to continue to keep the defense honest and keep that spacing. And he did a great job of doing that. So did the other guys. OG shooting the ball well also.
Mm-hmm. Before we get to some of that stuff, we'll switch to the defense. And I want to get your thoughts on just what you saw from the squad. I mean, OG had a terrific defensive game, as he always does. All defense, I'm sure, is going to be on the way.
First team.
Man, we got to get him.
In the words of TA, first team.
DPOY. We got to make that happen. That's for sure. At some point in his career.
Yeah. Because now everybody sees it now. Like, it's not like, is it going to happen? He could be. You hear other players from other teams, guys that are great scorers talking about him. And obviously you watch the game and you see it, right?
Yeah.
And then the crazy thing is he's got a guy that can keep him fresh with Scottie Barnes. So, like, guys getting that tandem, like Anthony coming in there and getting those two guys, like getting OG, and then OG gets tired and I send Scottie Barnes with his wingspan, his active hands and everything at you, like, because they're two different types of defenders. OG's very solid. He's got good hands. He'll get steals. But he's not going to gamble. He's just going to be in the way. Big, strong, agile. And then Scottie is just, like, all over you. Like, long wingspan, hands up, trying to get steals, trying to rush you, trying to – and I think that the difference between those two is what makes it the perfect tandem to be a switch-up.
That cardio work is really showing. That showed in that first game. He didn't stop. Scotty.
Yeah. They're playing at a good pace too. Like, they're getting up and down the floor.
Yeah.
They're changing ends. Guys are active. Like, they're in good shape.
So with OG against Anthony Edwards, so going through some of the numbers, Ant, great start, man. Holy, like, what a player.
He's nice, man.
You talk about guys that, you know, getting themselves feeling into the first game of the season. He started so well, 12 points in the first quarter. And OG after the game was asked about it. He's like, you know, like Ant was, he's such a good player. And I was kind of respecting him a little bit too much to a degree where I wasn't as aggressive as I need to be. They were going under on screens and right off the bat, Ant was making them pay. But after the first quarter, mind you, I said that Ant shot 3 of 5. He shot 5 of 22.
Yeah.
And OG is all over that. Stride for stride, staying with him.
He's everywhere. Like I said, he's so solid.
Yeah.
And he moves well. And even if you watch him when he's chasing somebody off a screen, even if he gets clipped, he's so strong, it doesn't slow him down.
Just like, blows through the defender.
He just changes his angle a little bit and he's just still moving, right? And he's got the length to cover ground. He's athletic. And I think his willingness to stay solid is what makes him so good.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't let the "I'm a really good defender" part go to his head where it makes him gamble. He's like, I can recover, or I could block it, or I could. He's just so solid. And that patience is what's making him really, really hard to beat for some of these scorers, because even when you get mad at him and you want to try to bully him, you can't do that because he's Knox.
And he's not even just like, he's using his body. He's playing fundamentally sound defense. Mm-hmm. He's not hacking at you. Yeah. And if he does dig at you, he's probably going to be coming up with the ball. And also his off ball digs, right? The way he tags and recovers, like, it's so impressive to watch, man. And there was a possession where it was empty side with Ant and OG, and Ant drove to the basket on the left side, and OG, terrific contest, and Ant went high off the backboard, didn't work. But then there's OG beating Ant down the floor on the other side, you know, sidestep, and he got a layup. Terrific start to the season for him, and some of those pull-up threes that he hit. We talked in the last episode about the pace in which down. Yeah, but the pace in which he is working in practice and the Steph Curry camp he attended, and this was a game where you saw some of that pay off.
Yeah, that definitely shows up in those type of shots. Like, the only way you can get good at off the dribble threes and the type of shots he's starting to create for himself is by working at them at pace. Doing them slow would not translate to the game. It's impossible, right? Like, because you can't, your mind and your body can't compensate for the drift that's going to happen, or the just a little bit of balance mechanics you got to change in the air sometimes. Like, you got to be able to produce force in practice to be able to take that to the game.
Yeah. The way he's pulling up with confidence too. Jakob Poeltl, maybe you can actually address this, because a couple of days ago I'd asked Jakob about different ways in which he sets screens for players, and he mentioned for Dennis Schroeder, it's a flat screen, right? But for OG, I mean, there was a pull up three. I should have asked you to look at this actually. There was a pull up three that he hit off of
going right.
Yeah,
going right.
What kind of screen is that? Floor.
A good one. like
he had
I don't really
back
have a
to
name.
The defender. He had his back to the defender, kind of, and he's like, he was kind of opening the waters, so to speak, for him.
It's just like Jak has just learned just how to be in the way too. Something like, just without getting an offensive foul, right? Without because sometimes like timing is gonna be a little off, and your job is to not always have to hit him, just make him change his route. That's what I should say to Jak. I was like, you don't always have to hit somebody. You just got to make sure they can't run in a straight line towards it. All I need is that little bit of them changing their route for timing to shoot the ball. I felt like I didn't need you to always clean somebody's clock every time. If you can, great, because then you'll get a layup. You know, every time you can really screen somebody, you do it. But if you're in a situation where it's on the fly like that and something's happening, just make sure they can't get a clean run to contest, and we can figure it out from there. And that's what he's really learning how to do. And you watch him even with Dennis, even on the ball screens, like, he's trying to set the flat screen. If he can't, he just slides down a little bit under it and makes the guy have to pick and choose over or under. And then they play. He didn't always have to hit the guy.
A couple of things on that. He was asked a little while ago about how do you set, you know, good fundamental screens and not get called for offensive fouls. He's like, well, the first part is just to get through the first 2 weeks of the season. Because it's such a focus with the officials, and he's like, you just have to get through it.
That's funny. That sounds like somebody that played for Pop. That's what that sounds like.
There you go. Yeah. And yesterday, I love seeing this, because so much talk has been around, you know, him at the elbow being this creator, facilitator, passing the ball. But he ran. He was at the elbow, and he ran a keeper, and he beat Rudy Gobert on the drive off the bounce and got a layup. I'm like, good for you, bro.
I think it happened. He had two drives in the game, if I'm not mistaken, but one was super nice. The one going to his right, I think the one you're talking about, he kept.
Yeah.
And he had to finish. But yeah, that dynamic is going to pay dividends during the season.
Mm-hmm.
Because bigs are going to fall asleep. They're going to try to drop and try to be and muck up things. And if he can just attack them where they have to at least, like, play him while he's holding the ball, it creates space. So he might only get that drive one, two times every couple of games, but just because he has the ability to do it, it changes the offense.
Yeah, he had three offensive rebounds, too. Actually, the Minnesota Timberwolves and Chris Finch had mentioned that they were going to put a heightened focus on offensive rebounding. Well, they had 16. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was a bit of a problem for the Raptors. But as Darko said after the game, there aren't too many teams that with that kind of length, you know, like they're a long team. And we talk about some of the issues the Raptors had on offense. It's because of the Wolves, too. Like, they're good.
Yeah, it's a good basketball team, right? Yeah. Like that. And there's a dang near 8-footer on the team on the floor. You got another guy who's 6'10", 6'11", can do a little bit of everything. You got, obviously, AE, you got Edwards, you got Mike Conley at the point guard, you got some long athletic wings. Kyle Anderson is a great point forward. They got a lot of good pieces. Nas is really good. They got guys. That team's going to be a really good basketball team. They're going to have a really good year.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing that shows the promise we're talking about, right? For them to go in there and you be able to blatantly see some of the things that we can really work on and be able to beat that really good basketball team.
Yeah. Jaden McDaniels wasn't even playing either. So that's another thing that I'm sure he would have been a factor.
Ah. There you go. Yep.
Yeah.
That's another shooter, another defender.
Yeah. Just got paid too. Salute to him.
He did. Yeah.
on the Raptors defense, back to that. So there are a couple of things that I wanted to get your thoughts on how the Raptors, because like it was sometimes you had Yaka a deep drop, right? Like he had his foot on the paint and they wanted to force those shots, and they have their players on the perimeter, they're screen navigating, they're getting around screens. Sometimes they're switching, not all the time. It depends. But I was intrigued by the way they were doubling and helping when Cat and Ant were in different spots on the court. Like when they're on around the corners, or they're at least they're being shaded towards the baseline, you had strong side help in like pretty interesting spots. And like these are some of the principles that we're actually going to be seeing from Darko and within his system. It's like him putting his own imprint on the game.
Yeah, that's one of the things that is probably that he's excited about from getting to play those guys on the first night, is that you get to put in and implement some things that you're going to need for some of these big time players throughout the season, right?
Yeah.
And to be able to get tested by a post guy and a wing on the first night is probably a coach's dream, right? I think that just being able to show those guys how much of the work can be done early in the possession to take those guys out of rhythm helps going throughout the year, because now we can get guys just being confident in me telling you, be there early. I know you got a guy on the other side of the floor. I know he can shoot, but if you're there early, then everybody else can move early and we can be ready for whatever's going on. I think that's the biggest thing. Like you said, you see the rotations and the early helps and guys going to dig no matter who they're guarding, right? Because they trust in what the other guy behind them is going to do. And that's a big sign in the first game.
Yeah. Good signs from the Raptors on defense. I mean, that's not that surprising. Like they have a lot of quality defenders, all NBA caliber defenders, Scotty Barnes, you got Precious Achiuwa, which we can just pivot to Precious right now. I mean, we're going to make our way throughout the team, but Precious, man, 8 points, 8 rebounds. I believe, I think he had more alley-oops in this game than he had all last season.
If he is a lob threat during the year, that I don't even know how to describe what that does. Like, right? Like, I don't know what.
Yeah.
That just because one, the play itself brings energy, right? An alley-oop changes everything. It changes the bench's energy, the crowd's energy, the guy who passed it, the team in general. Like, but let's just talk about what it does for just the threat it brings. How much people got to tag, how much people got to be worried about it stepping into the pick and roll with him. And we haven't even got to the fact that he can make a jump shot. It just hasn't presented itself yet, right? So if he rolls first hard for the first part of this year and catches lives, it will set up so many things for his game and everybody else. Shooters will get threes on the backsides and or guys will like being drops way too far for to have to be able to guard Dennis, right? And Dennis is coming full speed at him. There's so many things that presents. And then when he's in the pick and roll with Pascal or Scotty and his same size guys always mess up pick and rolls. when they're big guys. Yeah. The big guys and the like when you got like a 3-4 and a 4-5, they always mess it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just not used to being I mean, obviously people play small now, so you got some wings that can handle it, but for the most part, it always gets messed up. And if he rolls hard, it's gonna make his life easy.
I mean, again, we've talked about his rolling ability, what he could do, and also players' desire to roll. Do they want to do it? Because sometimes it's not fun. You know, it's not fun to roll to the basket, especially if it's, there's not always a payoff for the player. Yeah, exactly. And so it's kind of an acquired taste, I suppose. But for him, just like as a roller, what are the strengths and what makes him so capable and so lethal at it?
So it's when you're a guy that can do multiple things like him, it doesn't always want to be done because it was like, I could pop too. I could do this too. Most time, the really, really good rollers don't really shoot the ball well. They don't handle it well. They don't have, like, no offense to, like, Clint Capella. Clint Capella's not playing on the perimeter at all.
Yeah.
So when he sets a screen, I'm running towards the rim because that's my best chance of doing something offensively. Mm-hmm. No offense to that. That's just who he is. And I think, but for Precious, what it will do is, well, why he's so dangerous? First of all, he's extremely athletic, right? Mobile. He separates from the point of his screen. When he opens up to get to the rim, he gets there. Like, he does not waste time. Second of all, he's a freak athlete. The first pass that Pascal throws is a bad pass. It's too high. It's out of the way. It's high. And he goes and gets it, puts it down, right? To have a guy that gives you that much room for error as a lob threat definitely helps, right? Because now it didn't always have to be the best passer in the gym throwing a lob. Anybody feels confident throwing it up there because it's like, if I overthrow it, he's going to get it anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the things that really makes it dangerous. But the biggest thing is that, like, the effort, and it will keep him on the floor.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to keep him on the floor because it's a threat. And he didn't have to be a play called for him to be a threat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who didn't play yesterday? Chris Boucher.
Mm. Yeah, he didn't.
Right? 10-man rotation. And Grady Dick, he played 2 minutes.
I saw Grady.
Malachi, 9 minutes. Jalen McDaniels, I think he's going to be part of the rotation. He played 16. Chris Boucher didn't play. I was talking to some people. I noticed that because I was kind of waiting for the 10-man to reveal itself. And I was just kind of waiting for it. I'm like, who's going to be the odd man out?
Yeah.
And when I saw it was Chris, I pointed it out to people. And people were just like, really? Like, Chris, really? I'm like, I mean, it's early season, right? Like, I think a lot of things can change. Yeah, first game. Grady, again, only played 2 minutes. I think they wanted to give him perhaps, I don't know, like his family's in attendance. I saw them. I saw his dad. Yeah. He, nice guy. maybe they just want to give him a few minutes. I don't know. But also,
no, you want to give him a chance.
Yeah,
like you want to let him feel it. I don't think you want to wait 10 games and then you have to throw him out there, right? Like, I don't think you want to do that. Like, I think you want to give him a chance to feel it and see what he can do. Mm-hmm. There's an opportunity. I saw him talking about him the other day. They said he's coming along really, really fast and he's learning so much and he's doing. So you want to reward him for that also. Like, what he does, if he can keep himself on the floor, is not. But you gave him the opportunity to. Right. Mm-hmm. Like that's what you want to do with a young guy. You want to find ways to give them opportunity to turn 3 minutes into six and six into eight and these type things instead of just telling them they're doing a great job and then.
Yeah.
And then just sitting them down. Right.
Yeah. And Precious, like staying on Precious, he was rewarded yesterday because he played 24 minutes and coach was trying to get Jakob on the floor, but there was no whistles. And so we ended up essentially doing all the crunch time minutes. And again, it keeps on showing itself, the switchability, the versatility, how they can just hound teams and take away driving lanes and clog the paint and everything. And it shows more with Precious. Like, he had a couple of really great isolation possessions on defense too. He's mobile and he mentioned himself that he believes he is a, you know, top five defender. Or he's one of the five players in the NBA that can actually guard 1-5, which, I mean, people can dispute it, but he's not far off.
I believe it. Yeah, I believe it. I don't know how many there are, but I believe he can do it. I know that much. That's all I care about.
OG can too.
OG can do. Scotty can too. Pascal can. Pascal's just been carrying a bigger role as of late, like the last couple of years, but he can do it too when he's locked in.
Yeah. And
hopefully the rotation allows him to do it more, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his minutes were at 34 yesterday. When was the last time Pascal Siakam played 34 minutes in a game? I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe that's his number, which is good. I mean, like, outside of the there was a stretch in the third quarter where it was Pascal or Scotty plus four bench players. Those minutes mm-hmm. didn't go particularly well. And I'm not sure if you recall that time, but all I noticed that kind of the pace went away with the offense. I thought Pascal looked a little bit tired during that stretch too. But also it's kind of come down to, and Darko also said this after the game, he's like, it's one of the things I'm going to critique is like, I'm happy with how we played, but there's more opportunities for us to keep our tempo up on offense. And we have to focus on that.
Yeah. And then there's also the aspect of like, when you got Scotty and Pascal with some other guys who are kind of like lower, I don't know, best word, deeper in the rotation, they're watching them.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, those guys are going to get the shots. Those guys, I'm just waiting for them to pass it to me if I'm open. Like, they're not really trying to create the same as if they're with their unit, right? It was the same. It was kind of like that in the beginning when I was there, right? We had the bench mile. Before it became that, there would be times where Kyle would be in that lineup or DeMar would be in that lineup, and it would not be the same because we would almost defer to them a little bit just because of who they were and what they did, right? We would try to play off them, whether – instead of playing with them, because you don't want to get in their way. They're so talented. It's not a scared or it's a respect thing. It's like, all right, that guy's got his guy on the wing.
Yeah.
He's going to probably score. He's probably going to shoot it. Like, and he should shoot it, you know, like, so you kind of get stagnant a little bit because of that.
Yeah. And it was a bit of both too. Pascal didn't have his best shooting night, and we'll talk about Pascal after this. A couple of Butterfinger moments where like it seemed like the ball was attached to him on a string and he couldn't reach it. Yeah. A couple of those early days, all good. But between that in that third quarter stretch and along with, just the ball not really moving too much, it kind of explains why things went the way they did. Not that it went really that bad too. I mean, they were outscored by like, I think 3 points in that quarter. Throughout the game, defensive focus was definitely there. So that's obviously very encouraging. But let's talk about Pascal Siakam because he shot 3 of 5 from three. I mean, again, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of those were quick triggers. Two of them were late in the game, pick and roll with Dennis. Another one, Mike Conley offers some nail help and Pascal hits the shot along the wing, the deepest part of the three-point line. Yeah. Anything with this stroke, anything that stands out to you? Or is it just like, he's ready to shoot these.
He's just ready to shoot. Like he's in his stance. He's catching it, ready, staying there till it goes in. You know, it's not really anything he's changed. He's had good mechanics for a long time, right? You've seen the work he's putting on that. So it's just more so about being ready, having confidence in it, understanding the way we're going to play now, that this part of your game has an opportunity to stretch now. You're not going to have the ball and be in these mid-posts up, things like that. So I think the focus kind of shifts going into the year when you know that.
Yeah.
And I think it just goes into your preparation.
What I love about it is that before the back-to-back threes, he had 9 points. All of a sudden, just like that, back-to-back threes, balloons to 15. Mm-hmm. That's what I want from him. That's what I want from him. Easier buckets, easier points. And if he's able to hit these shots, I mean, it just changes so much for his offense and also how the Raptors look offensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It changes the way, because believe it or not, even possessions that come out with a bucket, nasty possessions still affect the morale of how you run your offense and how guys are, right?
Like,
a guy has to dribble it for 13 seconds and he gets kicked around and or somebody was open and he missed him, but then he makes a tough shot. You made the tough shot, good shot, but nobody likes it to be that way. Because then you get in a habit of leaning on that, thinking you can make these shots or you don't have to make the plays the right way and dudes like that. And it will carry over time. Or guys will stop cutting or guys will stop sliding to the open spot or stop setting screens the same. You know, it just kind of happens. And I think that's the biggest reason why clean possessions are so important.
Anything about the shots that he missed yesterday, or was it 5 of 17 is 5 of 17 today and tomorrow could be 10 of 17?
I think so. I think there's a couple going to the rim. I think he's just trying to get himself to the rim or to the free throw line there. And they let him play yesterday too. That's something we should say, like driving to the rim. There's a lot of like little hacks and little bumps that on both sides they didn't call. I like that for the first game. I don't want the first game for everybody to shoot 50 free throws and people are in foul trouble. Like, allow guys to start showing their identity as a team and being able to grow as the referees just kind of like start to adjust to how the game is being played, because the game has been different every year for like 4 or 5 years now.
Seriously.
So let's see what it is before we try to put our emphasis on it. This is a player's game. No, I love the referees. We need them, but the players dictate the way the game is played.
Mm. He also had 6 assists too. Pivoting mm-hmm. to Dennis Schroeder, who I want to point this out because one of the things that I had asked you about or to discuss going into this was his game management skills. I saw multiple occasions where Dennis would, you see the broken possession is happening and he's like, all right, P, come here. Mm-hmm. It's like the acknowledgement that you are our best player and this is your time to get us a good possession, a paint touch, pressure the paint, whatever the case is. We need you to do this. And it seems like he's really relishing that role as like the floor manager, game manager. He had, 7 assists, 8 of 17 shooting, 4 of 8 from 3. I really liked what he did yesterday.
Yeah, he just got a real good understanding. First of all, the confidence from the summer, I still see it on him, right? Like just from him playing and him winning and him running that team and doing the things he did is still on him. I can see it. But him just noticing when to reject screens, when to attack the slot, when they're running a play on the high side, when to take shots, when to slow it down, when to put guys in certain spaces is something that's going to carry this team throughout the year, right? I think him being able to do that is going to build other guys' confidence because it might not be Pascal DeCause the next game. It might he'll notice who's got it going or who's got the matchup and who's got whatever's going on. It's not just calling Pascal just because it's Pascal.
Yeah, he was getting to the rim too on multiple occasions. There was a case where a stretch where he made 5 straight buckets, 5 possessions in a row for at least his offensive production. And that was a key stretch, third quarter, fourth quarter area when those benchmans didn't really go according to plan. And then Darko brought in the starters and it was him getting some of those fast break layups in the open court. He is
he makes bullet. Some tough ones too, man. Yeah. He makes some tough finishes on the break too. Some tough contested ones, some tough just angles he gets to. And like you said, he's a bullet. Like he changes directions. Mm. He goes from left to right when he's like watching the play that's happening with the ball in his left hand. He goes from left to right downhill in that slot as fast as anybody.
Yeah. Late in the game, OG actually found him for a really nice, like around the rim. He's just kind of floating there. OG has some double staggers and there was a few cases where Dennis saw that, but then he's driving to the rim and he curled around, found OG around the nail area. And then OG made a smart play because Dennis was just kind of hanging around the paint a little bit. And there was a short little floater right there for him available. I just enjoy the attention to detail. They were giving him some credit on the Jumbotron for his MVP performance in FIBA. And they then went to Dennis on the court and all he was doing was just teaching guys.
Yeah. And that's how you get MVP.
Yeah.
That's why you're the most valuable player. Yeah. Trying to win the game.
That's what it is. Anything else on Dennis? I think he's just kind of, he's continuing to do what we thought he was going to do. He had a deep, Cat was in a deep drop. He had a pull up two, which would be a terrific bucket if he's able to hit those. There was another case where if he's able to hit that pull up three, but I mean, he also shot 4 of 8. And he hit the ones that he really had to hit.
I wrote that was in the notes for his pull up because they're going to be in that drop like that on him. If he can make those in that space, I know everybody's still arguing about the mid range and who takes them and who should, whatever. But like, if he can make that shot coming downhill with those bigs and those super drops, he's going to be unguardable in that situation.
Straight up. And if they're also continuing to run these like empty side stuff where if you have a big really in a deep drop, then like that pull-up's going to be right there for him. It's going to be completely
there. If you start shooting them off the glass, especially in those empty sides on those sides, just floaters off the glass, things like that from that area, it's good night in those situations.
Good night indeed. We'll wrap it up with Scotty Barnes. I also want to get your thoughts on Scotty Barnes. Scotty Barnes' first game of the season in general.
I mean, I think he's Scotty. I think there's still some more spaces he can find more opportunities for sure. But he's active. He's blocking shots. Like if he blocks shots like he did or just comes to help the way he did tonight all year, he's going to be a nightmare. Like I said, I already talked about on defensive end. But if he can do that off the ball too, there's one play he comes and gets somebody that's even after the whistle just because he's so engaged, right? He comes and blocks it. But he's just so mobile, so agile. He can do everything on the basketball floor. Pushes on the rebounds or the outlet. Active hands. He's in the gaps. He guards the ball. He's passionate about what he's doing. He's crashing. He's taking his open threes. He's going to shoot them well this year. I really believe that. And I think there's so many things in his game that are going to just come naturally this year because there's going to be opportunity. So he doesn't have to think about how am I going to get this and how am I going to do this? Not that it was no opportunities last year, but the different style of play is going to present it effortlessly instead of like, all right, I haven't gotten a shot. I should probably figure out how to get one.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that last year it happens just because the way the ball would move and stick sometimes. I don't think he's going to have to worry about that this year.
Yeah. The quick trigger three that he hit was beautiful. It was actually off a Grady Dick pass. And mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you're seeing, again, we talked about Pascal's shot. Do you see something different with Scotty, or is it just a bit more mechanically sound currently?
So I don't see anything wrong until I see the shots he's missing, like the free throw and like his floater a little bit, his follow through. The ball is getting off in his hand a little bit, and you can tell because he's trying to fix it, and his follow ends up going this way instead of this way. So like I saw it on a free throw and I saw it on a couple of shots, but like everything else is like so sound. Just the consistency of that will help. Like you said, like it takes him, I don't remember what he was from the field, but let's just say he's 4 for 9. It takes him to 6 for 11 because he gets 2 more shots because he made 2 more. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think it's just little things like that. And that's just stuff that just comes from reps.
Mm-hmm. So his game line was 17 points on 6 of 16 shooting, 1 of 4 from 3, 4 of 6 from the free throw line, some of the shots that you mentioned, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 5 blocks.
Exactly. Everywhere, right? Like, so like I said, we get him, he's, you said 6 for 16, 6 for 17?
Yeah, 6 for 16.
He's easily 8 for 17. Mm-hmm. 9 for like some of the little bunnies he might have. I couldn't call them bunnies, but shots that he's capable of making, bunnies for him.
Yeah.
And open 3 away from that game turning into a 25-point night, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
with those stats and not forcing anything.
Get 10 fast break points. And there was a case where he was like demanding pressures, like get him with a hit ahead pass. Like, yeah. Keep the pace up. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. That's coming from the coach's mouth right there. And I'm sure we want to see that too. And also, like, you want Scotty in the open court. Like, you want getting downhill, man. Like that. Those advantages, if he gets a smaller player on him, whoever it is, like, those are just easy points for your team.
But I also want him in the open court because he passes the ball so well.
Yeah.
Like, I want him to be able to make decisions freely and in the flow of it. I want him to be able to put people on their heels. That's the other reason. Like, I want him to be – I want that part to grow more confidence than anything because it gives me another playmaker on the floor like Dennis, like a passing playmaker. Not that other guys don't, but they make the right passes, but a guy – who creatively makes things happen for people, like makes something out of nothing passing the ball type stuff.
Scotty in the pick and roll. What did you see?
He looks comfortable. Like, that's the biggest thing I saw. He looks comfortable in it. You see him making his reads. You see him taking his time. If he has to put a guy on his hip in the pipe, he's not coming off of that thing, just firing at the guy in front of him, trying to run him over. Not all the time. He still has his times where he puts his head down, but he should.
Yeah.
But I mean, he just seems like he's really, they talk about young guys in the game slowing down, like the game's getting slow to him.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way I could explain that for him right now. He just looks like he looks like he's seen it before.
Got you. Yeah. I'm sure he watched a lot of film during the offseason. There was a DHO that he ran with Malachi Flynn that led into a pick and roll with Jakob Poeltl. And it didn't amount to a bucket. It was a good possession, but that's another part too, is that if you just get the defense kind of moving one way or whatever way, and now you're giving him just a small edge to be able to penetrate the paint. And there was a few occasions where, as you're talking about, where he's able to use a few escape dribbles out of situations to make sure he maintains his dribble. He's not picking it up. And he had to do that a lot last season, probably because he wasn't as comfortable, as you mentioned, with his ball handling. But it seems like that's a bit better this time around. And they're going to keep on running empty side stuff for him to ensure that you're getting good possessions and you're giving him a chance. And if it comes down to a switch, if it comes down to, you know, he's got a defender on his hip, you like the odds of him making the right play in those cases.
Yeah, especially and him getting people on his hip with his size, it doesn't matter the size of the defender once you're on his hip. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's 5'10 now once they're on his hip.
Yeah.
Because his size and his length and his ability to be at the rim or his ability to be able to see and make passes. So I think that's a good thing that he's added that into his bag and that for his patience.
He didn't shoot all that well today, but Gary Trent Jr., there was some possessions where Gary was the player one pass away in those pick and rolls. Gotta give another way to give him more avenues for good production in those cases.
Yeah. And then it'll come too with, I know as a shooter, like Gary, like I know for me, like coming into the season and seeing the sets they were running and the type of the way the game's flowing, the way guys, the place they like to be in, he'll be able to create more avenues for them to see him as he sees more of the stuff they're doing, as they play more minutes together, as they see the different flows and how people are guarding them and things like that. Cause then you can read the defense instead of just being so focused on read Scotty.
Yeah. Anything else on the CJ's notes? Do we miss anything?
I like that nobody was afraid of Gobert. Like when they went, even if he blocks, but nobody was like trying to do circus shots or anything. Like they were at him. Yak attacked him on the glass. There's the play where Precious comes in and climbs over everybody's backs and grabs and it dunks it, puts it back.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah. What else? I wrote Precious crazy. That's what I wrote. In the second quarter, just the lives and the energy that he brought in. He just changed the game. Still unselfish on the run. They're still passing the ball up, letting it fly. One of the plays they run, I really like with Pascal, where he screens and then he gets a screen four on top of the key. So, like, now it gets the defender off his body because they're going to go under.
Mm-hmm.
And now it creates a closeout. And if he's shooting it well and the guy closes out short or he runs at him, it puts him in position to attack it or catch and shoot. That's a really good play, a set that I like that they ran for him. Wrote down about Dennis in the pull-up. Playing hard defensively. Like they're playing hard. They're getting to it. Sloppy for the but both teams, right? Both teams had the butterfingers and all the things like that. Everything else we pretty much covered. That's pretty much it though.
14 turnovers for both teams. Not even that crazy, actually.
Yeah, and so maybe not the turnover number itself, but just the type of turnovers, right?
I get what you're saying.
Guys just like, it's all over the place. Balls on the floor rolling by itself so much during that game. it's just crazy to see, right? I can't believe the way it was happening. Like, it was just like, man, they look like either that ball is wet or like somebody's playing a prank or something. Like, it looked like it won. But there was like three or four possessions sometimes where guys are just hitting off somebody's knee, popping it up out of there, guys going to the rim, it ends up on the floor, three people on the floor trying to get it, it pops out, rolls down the floor. And like you said, Kyle Anderson gets an outlet, trips over his feet. Scotty tries to pick that ball up. He fumbles it. Like it was just weird.
Yeah. You walk into that game and you're thinking it's like you're going to be 20 turnovers per team, but it was only 14. Exactly. And I was like, oh, okay, well.
It looked crazy.
A funny game, but the Raptors win. So as we have mentioned, every Thursday, we will be releasing episodes. So the next time we talk, we'll have a bunch more games to kind of analyze. But for now.
Yeah, how many games is it?
Well,
how many games still next Thursday? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Then they got Saturday. They got Monday and Wednesday, I believe.
There we go. Well, we got a lot to talk about next week.
Exactly. So there you go. CJ, closing thoughts? Anything you want to mention?
Can't win two in a row till you win one in a row. We're on a good start.
Oh, I like that one. I like that line. Use it. Kyle
Korver used to say that all the time. Can't win four until you win three.
You used that last year when we were hoping the Raptors would make a rally in late part of the season. Man, it didn't really happen. Anyways.
it's truth though. You can't win. You got to win one before you can win two. So we're off to a good start.
Hell yeah. All right, y'all.
82-0.
There we go. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Every Thursday, you will find Strictly Hoops on your podcast feed or on YouTube. Take it easy.
Everywhere. Love. Press every button.
Hey, what's it like?
Hey.
eBay, what's it like? What's it like? What's it like to see the moment? To feel yourself growing. This is greatness that I'm showing. Close your eyes. I'm still glowing. Close the door. I'm still going. This is grand business. Have a seat and be a witness. Hey, what's it like?
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan,
turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about UnitedHealthcare insurance plans at uh1.com.